Good morning, everybody. Good morning, members. It's February 10th, Monday. A quorum is present in the Minnesota Senate Education Policy Committee will now come to order. Today, we have two bills on the agenda, one by Senator Abler. He'll go first. Just because he's not here. Sorry. A little too much frivolity on a Monday. Happy Valentine's Day week, by the way, for all of you out there. The first bill on the agenda is Senator Mann, Senate File 508, which deals with cell phones in our schools. We have a few testifiers. Because we don't have, like, a dozen testifiers or so, I think we'll have questions after each testifier. So if you have any questions specifically for that testifier, so that they can get on their way if they have to leave. So anyways, that's the plan. And so with that said, Senator Mann, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So my LA, Maggie, and I spent the last summer and fall traveling to different areas across the state and hearing from different school districts about what they are seeing and what they are doing about cell phone uses in school. We spoke to schools who were about to implement policies, schools who had had policies in place for 1 to 2 years, and some with policies in place for much longer. And why did we do this? Well, we know that the evolution of technology is outpacing our ability to react to it. There is mounting evidence that cell phones are taking a serious toll on students' ability to focus in the classroom and their overall mental health. We had kids in front of this very committee last year asking for something to be done about cell phones in schools, and so we traveled across the state to gather more information. While traveling across districts, we heard stories of kids taking pictures of tests, taking and sending pictures of one another without consent, and sending naked pictures to classmates in group chats. In one district, when we asked if kids had ever seen a naked picture of a random classmate, the majority of the kids that were at the round table shrugged and said, yeah, like it was no big deal as our jaws hit the floor. Quotes that we heard during some of these roundtables include, cell phones are robbing kids of the skills they need to navigate the world. Cell phones are taking away their childhood. When some kids have cell phones and others don't, you feel left out if you don't have one, but you feel terrible when you do have one and you aren't part of whatever's going on that day. You just can't win, said one student. Now, every single district that we talked to said that students are having a difficult time concentrating, difficult time participating, and that the constant notifications going off distract the entire class. And students are socializing less face-to-face. Administrators and teachers also noted that there has been an increase in conflict between students because of this technology, an increased incidence of cyberbullying, and increase in conflict between teachers and students. Again, these things were said across every district that we went to without fail. In response, many schools across the country have gone cell phone free, and these schools report an improved culture, students paying more attention in class, more social interaction among students. I have yet to find a report from any school in any state that said that they went back to allowing cell phones in schools because they had an untoward or a bad outcome or a bad effect on students. Not one report. States like Florida, Indiana, Louisiana, Virginia, South Carolina, for example, already have statewide bans on cell phone in schools. Many states have pilot programs in place to ban the use of cell phone in school, including Arkansas, Delaware, Pennsylvania. And multiple states require schools to have a cell phone policy, including Minnesota, or directing their departments of education to come up with policies discussing the use or limiting the use of cell phone in the classroom. Reading through the data and reports from other states, what we learned from going across our state was very similar to what other states have been reporting. Common concerns across the districts in Minnesota include that teachers do not want to be responsible for coming up with and enforcing cell phone policies at the classroom level. Teachers have to spend too much time regulating this instead of teaching, and it pits teachers against teachers. The cool teacher next door lets me use my cell phone during class, why can't you? And lastly, of course, it pits students against teachers, which disrupts that learning-teaching relationship. Another common theme was that banning cell phones in schools from grades K through 8 is a no-brainer. Everyone's like, yeah, we should do that. However, in 9 through 12, it was a more nuanced conversation. We learned that there's many reasons for a 15 to 19-year-old to have a cell phone. For example, they might be the primary translator for their family, they might have a child at home, or they're the primary caretaker of a sibling. And the last piece that was common among districts was the education piece. Education is very important. One, education for students as to why this is happening, why they shouldn't have cell phones in the classroom. Two, education for parents as to why their children do not need cell phones in the classroom. Three, a statewide public health education campaign to discuss the harmful outcomes and excessive cell phone use and use while in the classroom. And lastly, education for digital literacy. How do we teach our students to be responsible digital citizens because they are going to have access to cell phones? So what was not agreed upon during our conversations across the state was how to accomplish this. Some schools use pouches that hang over the doors and students deposit their phones when they walk in the classroom. Some students have individualized cell phone pouches that lock during the day. Most schools, I would say, that we talked to have the students place their cell phones in their locker or in their backpack when they're out of sight and they are turned off. Most schools did do the same thing when it came to enforcement. It is not a punitive measure that we're trying to implement. And so what they did was a stepwise approach where first infraction, you're asked to put the cell phone away. Second or third time, the cell gets taken to the principal's office. And lastly, when you reach a certain number, then the parent has to come to the school and pick up your cell phone. Schools are telling us that for the most part, kids are doing just fine, that students, the districts that have implemented this, and that maybe there's a handful of times that they've had to call a parent to come pick up a cell phone. So this policy that most schools are using comes from the Principals Association, and much to their credit, it appears to be working really well. And of course, there are many exceptions, again, like we mentioned, IEPs, medical conditions, or exceptions made by principals, knowing that the individual circumstance of the students and all of these things are allowed in the current version of the bill. We want kids to focus on learning, and the details of how to do that, how to make sure that they have a distraction-free environment in our bill, we have left it up 100% to each individual district. Some other quotes we heard from districts that have had cell phone policies implementation in place. The culture of the school has completely changed once cell phones have been removed. Kids that never talked to each other are now talking. Students are looking each other eye to eye, and there is less conflict in schools. Another district said, we removed cell phones during class time, but allowed them during lunch. The conflicts in the afternoon stemming from social media interaction were significantly more frequent and more serious than anything that occurred in the morning. So in summary, this bill is very simple. It takes into consideration what was asked of us by the many school districts. It restricts cell phone use in K-8. And then restrict cell phone use in the classroom 9 through 12. Again, how it's done is completely up to each individual district, and it includes funding for those education pieces that we talked about. With that, Mr. Chair, that was what we learned, and also the bill all in one.
Thank you, Senator Mann, and thank you for sacrificing your fall and doing setting up these roundtables throughout the state. It's noble on your part to seek the information out. Members, are there any questions specifically for Senator Mann with respect, not to the bill, because that can come up when we're done with testifiers, but about her experience conducting these roundtables? Okay. Off to the testifiers. First up, we have Dr. Anna Tierney, and she's remote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, senators, and honorable members of the Senate Education Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm here to offer my full support for the proposed bill to restrict the use of cell phones in schools. As a parent with children in the Bloomington Public Schools, and as someone deeply involved in advocating for our youth's social and emotional well-being, I recognize the significance of engaging in thoughtful discussions and critically evaluating the potential risks associated with cell phone use in schools. I have two daughters. one in elementary school and the other in middle school. So I have firsthand experience observing the growing use of cell phones and social media among our youth. I'm very passionate about examining the impact that changes in technology, such as cell phone use during school, may have on our children and adolescents' social and emotional health. As a parent and as a licensed psychologist, I've observed how inappropriate use of cell phones and social media can negatively impact them. I'd like to note, however, I do not consider myself an expert in the intersection of technology and children. My testimony is based on my experiences as a parent, my background in psychology, anecdotal observations from my private practice, and my concern for the mental health and well-being of children and adolescents in our schools. I am very concerned about the increased prevalence of cell phone use during school hours. We've seen that cell phones in schools can lead to heightened anxiety, difficulties with attention and concentration, and poor academic performance. The increased use of social media apps and texting by students during school hours, and this is happening, I hear about it from my children and from my clients, has led to increased instances of cyberbullying, distribution of inappropriate pictures or texts, and I've even heard of instances where kids have sent texts or snaps or other types of technology during the school day, which later led to physical or emotional violence in the school setting later on. I believe it's crucial for our educational and government leaders to engage in thoughtful, evidence-based discussions and develop legislation that safeguards our children from the potential negative impacts of cell phone use in schools. I also believe it's important to consider this issue from a culturally sensitive lens. It's important that we consider the diverse needs regarding cell phone use in schools, like Senator Mann referenced prior. I also think it's important to think about the age and their brain development while creating these policies, as adolescents or high school students will have different needs than our elementary and middle school students. As a mother and as a psychologist, I've always believed that the best intervention is prevention. In an age where technology is developing quickly, very quickly, and a large part of, and is a very big part of our lives, I believe that creating policies that include teaching children and adolescents how to appropriately use this technology, cell phones, social media, is very important for their safety and their well-being. We need to develop clear guidelines and digital literacy education to help students develop the skills necessary to use their devices effectively and responsibly while minimizing distractions and the potential for unsafe behaviors, because it can happen so incredibly quickly, even when you think that you have everything locked down. I respectfully ask you to consider the impact of cell phones on our children's well-being in schools. By finding a balanced approach, we can help create a safe, supportive environment where our children can thrive academically, emotionally, and ensure that they have the best opportunity for success. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Tierney. Members, any questions? Okay, thank you. The next two testifiers, are they together, so to speak? Dr. Putnam and Ms. Kenzie, can you guys come up and identify yourself and make sure you sign in wherever that sheet is? And we look forward to your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Szczesinski. I'm Lori Putnam, Superintendent with St. Cloud Area Public Schools.
And good morning, I'm Molly Kenzie with St. Cloud Area Schools, specifically Tech High School.
Mr. Chair, we have a presentation. Do you know if it's going to pop up there?
Great.
I'll get started if it's okay. And
oh my God.
That was actually really fun.
That was staged. I planned that to illustrate the problem we're having in schools.
That was good.
That was well played. I'll get started, and this will come up when it does. Good afternoon, Chair Swazinski, members of the Ed Policy Committee. Thank you for having us here today. And also, I just want to say, echo your appreciation for Senator Mann's journeys to other school districts. She did come to visit us, and we were grateful for the time that you spent hearing about the challenges that we faced and the solutions that we had put into place. We are excited to talk about the ongoing challenge that continues to shape the educational landscape, of course, cell phones and social media education. For us, however, I just want to be clear that this presentation is not about us advocating for legislation, but rather because our current policies and practice mirrors that of the policy that's or the bill that's up, that we are glad to share our experience. As a superintendent, I know that other superintendents have worked diligently with their own boards to create policies and procedures that work for them, and I would not presume to assume that what we do in St. Cloud also matches their needs. And so we're here to share our perspective and some data on the work that we've done over the past year. First, I want to, oh, is this going? I'm going to assume that's up. Is that working?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, so you got it. Perfect. Yep, that's it. Thank you. Appreciate you, Senator Duckworth. Okay, so we'll go on to the next slide, on slide two. On December 3rd, we know that the U.S. Department of Education called on schools and districts to create cell phone policies. Schools across the country are grappling with this issue. It is not unique to St. Cloud. It is not unique to Minnesota, as we heard. They recommended three factors to consider when developing the policies. Age appropriateness. We know that younger students need different policy and regulation than do our older students, as you heard, equity and accessibility, that the should not disproportionately impact any specific students or groups to create any additional barriers to learning, and consistent application and communication. And we all know, you guys probably more than I, that a policy is only good as its implementation, and ensuring that students, families, and staff understand the why behind that to be able to make sure that our application is consistent is absolutely critical. We want to take a quick look at the three general policy approaches that schools can take when crafting their policies, and this is what we did, and you'll see a mix and match. So the U.S. Department of Education outlines three different approaches. One is which there's the no formal policy, which I think many of us relied upon for years, and it was a hit or miss depending on what the teachers needed in the cell phone and in their classroom. And as we heard from Senator Mann, that does pit teachers against teachers, students against teachers, and so we ruled that one out. There's a schedule-based restriction where during the school day, cell phones are permitted during specific parts of the day and not others. Often that's around breaks, lunch, transitions is when they might be allowed. And it reinforces the responsible use of those cell phones while also making sure that the learning environment is prioritized. There's also the full day restriction, and you'll see when we present our policy that we did a combination of those two where, of course, phones are not permitted throughout the day. And, you know, every district, of course, has to weigh the pros and cons for their own community. So looking at how our district has crafted our policy, in our elementary and middle schools, we have an away for the day. I would love to think that we wouldn't even need that at elementary schools, but as you'll see from our data, that is not the case. And we do need to be very clear with our elementary families and students that cell phones are not allowed in our classrooms. We do say that phones, should they be brought to campus, we ask at our elementary schools they not even be brought. But should they be brought to campus, they do have to be stored in a locker, not in a backpack that's carried around. It has to be placed in the locker at the start of the day, and it stays there until the very end of the day. We know that we have seen a significant benefit at our middle level particularly, and we'll talk about that when we get to the data from that away for the date policy. At high school, we did, however, take a little bit of a different approach.
So in our high schools, we take a schedule-based restriction approach called Away for Learning. Students must keep their phones in their backpack during class time, and it is allowed out during lunch and passing times. This policy does allow our older students that flexibility, as well as recognizes the need for their self-regulation skills, and they may require the use of their phone for appointments, schedules, connecting with families, and so on. Why not a full ban? Many high schools across Minnesota are moving away from a blanket ban to foster responsible technology use. Digital literacy is crucial, and we want to model appropriate use rather than prohibit it entirely. Beyond school policies, we also need to consider the impact of social media on our students' well-being. Social media plays a major role in our students' lives, and it comes with significant challenges. Research from the American Academy of Pediatrics highlights three concerns, the first being mental health. Social media contributes to anxiety, depression, body images, issues, and especially due to unrealistic comparison and cyberbullying. We also know of sleep disruptions, that blue light from screens affects our sleep quality, and it leads to fatigue and poor academic achievement. Attention span, that constant notification and endless scrolling makes it harder for our students to focus and retain their information. These are real concerns, and our role as educators is to help students develop healthier digital habits. Digital literacy must be explicitly taught, just like any other subject in school. Our approach focuses on three areas: digital citizenship, where we teach students about online safety, privacy, and responsible behavior, which includes cyberbullying. Also, mindfulness use, encouraging our students to set boundaries and create balance with screen time. Media literacy, we help our students critically analyze online content where they can recognize misinformation and understand how algorithms shape their personal feed. We also integrate technology literacy into our classrooms, where we promote responsible use. Rather than banning technology, we embed digital skills into our classroom each day. Our approach includes, first, technology integration. We use devices meaningfully and as a tool rather than distractions. Our digital citizenship, our digital skills development is where we teach students how to create, share, and evaluate digital content. And our students' favorite, project-based learning, where we encourage collaboration and critical thinking through the use of technology. Our parents also play a vital role in guiding our students in their digital habits. Families are our key partners in promoting responsible technology use. And we provide support through parent workshops, where we offer information on risk, benefits, and strategies for guiding teens through social media use. We encourage open dialogue for our parents to talk freely with their students about online behavior, as well as develop family media plans, helping our families create structured screen time and rules based on our knowledge and experience with social media and digital skills. Now, we'll take a look at some of our data trends that we've observed in our district regarding cell phone use.
So the conversation in St. Cloud actually started with our middle school principals. And we put our policy into place beginning with the 23-24 school year, so a full year ago. And so we're halfway through implementation of this policy, so a year and a half. And the middle school principals saw a significant safety concern based on social media interaction that was happening, particularly in the evenings, and then it carried over into the morning, and then there would be sometimes some antagonism happening during the school day with our middle schoolers, particularly sometimes arranging for fights even during the school day, and it really got to be where they were spending all of their time. Navigating this and in some ways I think taking on the role of that family figure where there wasn't limitation happening at home, and so it really our school district and our principals were carrying the brunt of that burden. So they said, could we please try? Let's just stop letting students have cell phones at the middle level. So we piloted it for a trimester, and then we rolled it out across all of our middles. Elementary has never allowed cell phones. And so over the, you know, says we, so the data that we have, there are 2 years that we looked at prior to and now a year and a half, and we've seen a 50% reduction in cell phone discipline referrals. And so those are entered by our teachers, addressed by either our deans or our principals, and we're really proud of that because that really speaks to, while we don't have the match, it is certainly a corollary to increased engagement in the classroom, and it decreases those power struggles that are happening day to day when someone's saying, put away your cell phone. I don't want to put away my cell phone, right? That sort of thing. So we're really pleased with that 50% reduction. Interestingly, we still have the highest rate of our incidences are with our juniors, which is an interesting thing and something that our high school principals continue to try to work on. We know ninth grade is also an issue, but that ninth and 11th is really where we're seeing the spikes. Our range in 2025 so far has included 3 cell phone violations at kindergarten, which is just heartbreaking to me that our littles are coming with that in hand. This year so far, we've had 122 incidents at ninth grade. And we are a PBIS district, so we have teams of teachers partnering with our administrators who look at that data, and then they implement strategies to try to address that specific to where it's happening, when it's happening, and for whom it's happening. Obviously, elementary students generally have the lowest rate of incidents, which speaks to the role, the essential role that parents play in this conversation. And we believe that the data indicates that the policies combined with the education that we are doing is really having a positive impact. As we take a look at year over year rate change, we do see a steady decline since we've implemented, but we do remain open, knowing that there continue to be issues, and I think Molly could speak to it better than I can at the high school level, and how we can better support our staff and our students and our families as they learn that responsible digital citizenship with their phones in hand. So we do appreciate the opportunity to be here, and we welcome any questions should you have them.
Thank you, and I apologize for the technology issue. So we appreciate that you put this in our packets as well and provided that for us to follow if we needed to follow along. Members, any questions? Well, I have two. Do you have staff and parent buy-in on this, or some level of resistance, or what would you say about staff and community, parents in the community?
I'll speak from the K-8 perspective, and if Molly will take the high schools. Our parents and staff are 100% bought in. I was a little nervous as a parent myself of kids in our district. So I was a little nervous about what parents were going to say. There was not, I think, maybe a couple questions, like, how am I going to get a hold of my kid? Oh, yeah, remember there is that thing in the, right, that landline that's in our office that we're happy to take your calls. Since those first initial questions, we have had no pushback and, in fact, have gotten appreciation at the K-8 level from both staff and families and even students. And Molly, I'd ask if you'd respond to the high school.
Yeah, I think in the high school lens, it really is that communication early. And so when we've set this in place, if a student has their phone out during class, it's connecting with that student on the root cause of why it's out and what they're distracted or what they're doing, and then communicating back to family that this is our expectation and this is our approach. And so we work really in great partnership with our families to make sure that we're understanding kind of that process of if this continues to happen, you'll have to pick up the phone, and really understanding that piece. And then our teachers appreciate it. So they know that those distractions during academic time is really unfortunate, and it takes away from what they're doing at hand. And so we have a full set of team between our admin team and our deans really trying to circle up and work through it quickly so that we can get students right back to learning.
Thank you for that. And you... thank you. You mentioned that 11th grade is the most problem. I mean, having taught high school for over 30 years, I would just assume the K through 8 and the 9th graders, oh my God, I have all this freedom, now that they'd be the most egregious violators of the policy. But you mentioned 11th grade. Just any insights into why 11th grade and not 9th?
I would speculate that it has to do with COVID. they spent their middle school years at home or in some type of hybrid model, and now it's just been really a part of who they are. And so I think that has a big impact on it. Not that there weren't rules at home during that time. I think they just had a lot more access to their personal devices during that time. And then, yes, ninth grade is, they went from, especially this year, they went from having zero access to their phones in middle level. And I think it's just a part of that transition, really trying to test the waters, learn the system, see what they can get away with, and really see what the follow-through's like. So I think that's the two pieces for me.
And just one more question. I thank you for that. Have you had to hire more staff because of an increase in number of parent phone calls to try to get in touch with their kid? Or was the current staff able to meet the needs of increased number of parents needing to reach their kids now that they can't use their cell phones?
We have not seen an increased need for more staff to do that.
Thank you. Senator Kunesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for this this presentation. There's a lot of really good information in here. I really perked up when you were talking about educating students on responsible social media use and incorporating technology literacy into the curriculum. I was a library media specialist for 20 years, and that was really the core of the curriculum for library media specialists, was to really teach kids about responsible use and being able to discern fact from fiction, what it means to use the information in an ethical way, as well as any of the tools such as photographs and information like that. And we've seen, the demise of library media specialists in schools. And so my question for you is, how do you explicitly incorporate all of these things like digital citizenship, media literacy, mindful use, and then down here with the incorporating technology literacy into the curriculum, like specifically how are you doing this, where are you doing this, and what kind of outcomes are you seeing?
Chair Szczesinski, Senator Kunesh, thank you for the questions. Again, we'll tag team this between K-8 and 9-12. We have been fortunate to keep the majority of our media specialists, and they are integral in laying out the curricula. Right before I came on, I texted the person who helps support all of our media specialists across and just said, what are the curricula that we use, to make sure that I knew should this question come up. And so they are key players in this conversation, particularly at elementary. They deliver a lot of those lessons. At middle school, when we see them being pulled a little bit more with testing, we do integrate that into our advisory lessons so that it's woven throughout, and we know that every student is getting it on a more frequent basis. We know media specialists at elementary are, trying to cover 800 kids or 500 students, and so to be able to have somebody consistent that can deliver it with a 1-to-30 ratio is a little bit easier for us. And so I like to think that we are having an impact on our students. It's not something that we measure specifically outside of like the ODRs, but I think that's, as you say that, I think that might be a question that we could add into our climate survey, just to get a sense of, because we always ask questions about belonging and safety and your perspective on relationships, but I would be curious to know students' perspectives on what role social media might play on those perceptions of belonging, safety, and respect. So I appreciate that question. And I'll invite Principal Kenzie to respond from a high school level.
Yes, so we also do digital citizenship is embedded in our advisory lessons through our PBIS committee. And so our teachers are looping that into lessons monthly, just really around what are the impacts of social media, what's your digital footprint, what skills are you maybe missing, so that we can use our media specialists to circle around and pull a few students in and help give them whatever skills they might be missing just on their personal Chromebook book for school and things like that. Also, our language arts teachers and our social studies teachers, I would say, are pretty well-versed in some of these pieces. And so when they get together to do that research paper, and when we're digging into understanding media and what's true and what's what side of things that all that information is being taken in, how do we know and how do we check sources and do some of that? And so I feel really confident that they're the experts in those spaces, and they're continuing to ask questions and move along with the trends in technology, because we see the second we think we've caught up, it keeps on moving. And then lastly, when we talk about students who are getting these ODRs and are getting these referrals, it's not just here's your phone, you get it back at the end of the day, right? We're really leaning into those conversations, and we do at Tech and at Apollo these accountability projects where students are following along a module and really learning the impact and the harm that sometimes comes from that constant distraction or when we are bullying through social media. And so really trying to create kind of that robust learning experience, not just taking something away in hopes that they don't get caught the next day.
Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to both of you for this presentation and for sharing, for all the work you've done around this really important topic and for sharing that with us. I appreciate the info you have around the data and the what you're seeing with the decreased use. My question is, it looks to me like perhaps this year you're seeing a bit of an uptick in use. So my question is, one, am I looking at that correctly? And two, do you have thoughts about why that might be?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator Bolden. I asked the same question of our Executive Director of REA. One thing that she believes is that we are actually keeping better data. This year, we have switched to a system where teachers can enter their own classroom data instead of writing it up and then sending it to somebody else to enter. So she believes that's part of it. Otherwise, I don't have a good answer for you. I'll leave it at that. I don't have a good answer for you. Do you have any sense?
I think it's just the consistency. Our dean team and our assistant principal teams have really worked together so that things feel, things are more consistent. And so I think that really helps with cleaner data.
Senator Makewade.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for coming and presenting this and being someone I can ask questions to. The one thing I want to say about your bill, Senator Mann, and anybody who's going to come testify about it, is that I feel a little bit like a crazy person because these devices were specifically designed to addict children to them, like that, and adults, right? Like they were meant to be addictive. Everything that's on them is meant to be addictive. And so I feel a little bit like we're trying to solve a problem that was intentionally created by tech companies. And so then we're sitting here being like, and are the parents bought in? You know, we like keep putting it on the parents as if it's their job to somehow make their kid not addictive to something that was meant to be addictive, right? I think it was the early Facebook investor was like, God only knows what we did to our children's brains. Well, we are seeing it in the classrooms. And so it's just like that's who's responsible for this. And then we put it on individual parents, we put it on teachers, we put it on districts. And that's just not where like the solutions should be coming from. Like we shouldn't be allowed to addict kids to things with no consequences. And so I appreciate you then coming in behind and trying to have a solution that I'm sure took a lot of time and a lot of implementation. And that's what your bill is too, Senator Mann. I have questions about, and I have maybe an idea of what might be causing this uptick this year. Are you seeing a lot of kids talking on chatbots, AI chatbots on their phones? Which are, for the committee's edification, is they're just characters that are AI chatbots that you can make in any sort of personality or, you know, fanfic or whatever, and then you talk to them, and kids are spending more minutes per day on character.ai than they are on TikTok. They're developing relationships. It's sexual in nature. It's encouraging them to have eating disorders, self-harm, suicide. There is a child in Florida who died after having a relationship with a chatbot. So I'm wondering if the unleashing of this really horrible technology onto phones widespread late last year and early this year might be part of the uptick.
Thank you for the question, Senator Makewade. I appreciate that acknowledgement, right, that this is really a intentional decision on the part of people who are making a lot of money off our kids, right? I think something that we've had to deal with recently, right, is around vaping, yeah. right? And we've seen the effectiveness. We have seen, right, an impact by the litigation around Juul, mm-hmm. right? And the policies that you guys make, right, that really are able to hold some of those people accountable. And so I think there's some good lessons to be learned, right? Certainly we still had to respond. We still had to educate. We still had to put in vape detectors and follow up on, you know, when students are breaking our drug policies. And we will continue to do so around cell phone and social media misuse. But I appreciate you calling out that the blame lies elsewhere, certainly not on our kids, right? And our educators or our families, though we all have a role to play, right, in mitigating the impact of the decisions that have been made. And I have not, I can't say that I've specifically seen a significant impact. I still think that the majority of our response, our incidences are around Snapchat, those sorts of social online engagements. But I think that that's a wise awareness as I've been on it myself and tried it out, and it is really enticing. Mm-hmm. So I certainly think that that's something to be aware of. Molly, have you seen any specific thing around chat?
Not AI? In use of, yeah. Like that relationship piece of talking back and forth to a chat box. I think we see it in a variety of ways as it's new, mm-hmm. right? And so whether it's supporting some understanding of a test or mm-hmm. Developing a study guide by putting in what you're learning in it, I think kids always find their ways to use creativity, and this is one of those other elements. And so we're still trying to figure out kind of what that means for us and how we navigate. But that the addiction piece is interesting, right? So, like, we have a chemical health counselor in our building who supports that component. And so as we're seeing this constant need, right, how do we direct students and families to the right supports to help with what that could look like for them?
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that. That's really, really helpful context. And I wrote down Snapchat/others. Senator Mann mentioned in her opening that there was like this widespread shrug from some students when they were like, have you seen, you know, naked photos? Have you seen that these are like actual photos that are being taken, or are students using nudification apps that are like nudifying pictures of regular people in regular clothes?
Thank you. Unfortunately, I think we've seen probably both. Okay. And that's the telling or the hard piece, right? So how do we work with we're fortunate enough to have a school resource officer who's a great partner with us. And so anytime those things come up, we lead with that teaching lens first, knowing that our kids are 14, 15, 16, 17, and could lead down some dangerous next steps. And so how do we make sure that when we're making the decisions we're making, we have a full understanding of what that could mean moving forward.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick one. First, how many students roughly are in the St. Cloud Area School District?
About 9,500.
Okay, thank you, if I may, Mr. Chair. So one of our larger school districts, out of curiosity, when you all implemented this policy, was there a large expense that you incurred to do so, or would you say it was fairly negligible?
I can't think of any significant expense. Right? It was really about maybe utilizing some of our time to train in terms of professional development and getting staff on the same page, right? So in terms of time being a resource, but otherwise it didn't cost us money. We didn't add staff. It was just adjusting our curricula and time communicating with families.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you, Senator Mann. We do have many other testifiers, so thanks for coming in. Thanks for indulging us. I thought you were going to say the uptick in usage this fall was because of civic engagement about the presidential campaign, but that wasn't the case, evidently. And I just want to say, you know, I don't know what to do about this. And as an educator, as a grandparent, I just don't know. And, you know, we banned smoking until you're 21 or what?
Yeah, 21, we ban, you know, alcohol till 21. We ban gambling until they're a certain age, 18. And I don't know what to do about this. All I know is all those years of teaching, I loved when the kids came during passing time to the class, because they would, the boys would push each other into the walls and call each other knuckleheads, and the girls would sit and chit chat about the day so far, and you'd even see an occasional kid by accident maybe reading a book, and I don't see that anymore when I visit classrooms. Now, if it's passing time and the school allows it, they're on their cell phones until the teacher says put them away, and I don't know. I don't know if we're doing them a service, and I just don't know. So we need experts like you to come in and guide us on how to proceed and what the right thing to do is for our society and our state and our kids and our and everybody involved in this. What Senator May Quaid referred to as intentional addiction. So anyways, thanks for coming in. How's the Superintendent of the Year research going?
Delightful.
Still on pins and needles?
Thank you. Yes, we okay. Won't go for a while yet.
Thank you for coming in. Next up, Alex Hazelton.
Hazelton.
Yeah. And then Corey Johnson's next, and just identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Alex Hazelton. Thank you, Chair Swatzinski and members of the committee. My name is Alex Hazelton. I have taught high school social studies for 15 years in Minneapolis Public Schools, and I'm excited to testify to the positive aspects of Senate File 508 from a teacher's perspective. Why is this bill good? It provides more clarity on who's responsible for enforcing the restricted use of cell phones and smartwatches. The way I read it, that's the administrators, so thank you. That's nice. Some more clarity could be helpful, though. This bill gives administrators backup they need to support the learning environment of the classroom. Educators will ultimately be enforcing this as well. We too should have voice in the discretion of use. You know, what it looks like in school should include us. For example, like should students be able to bring their cell phones to the restrooms? Conversation like that. Consistent expectations from school to school to classroom matter for this to be an effective policy. It's reasonable and practical to restrict the use of devices in the classrooms. I remember teaching before the use of cell phones and social media. My lessons didn't compete with TikTok, but they do now. Students are not fools, and they know the downfalls of too much use of their phones, just as we do as adults. Enforcing unclear cell phone rules has wasted valuable time teaching, because in some places there's not a clear and uniform backup on enforcement from administrators. The situation I never wanted, but would inevitably happen, is some form of power struggle to get students to put their phones away. Just walking around the classroom after providing instructions and having to tell people multiple times to put their phones away just to get started on their learning activity, that's a waste of time, and that's not time spent on learning. Without phones, repeating directions becomes less frequent, which is nice. Frankly, why do I share all of this? Making a classroom a better place to teach addresses teacher burnout. When students are engaged and your lesson is going well because you see students making connections to the content, you know, that makes you feel more fulfilled. You know, putting time and effort into an engaging lesson for it to go well. Contrast that with the same monotonous request to put the phones away several times throughout a lesson. Teachers, we don't enter the profession excited about telling students to put their phones away. We get into the profession to make a difference, and I think this bill will make a difference as well. I like that it puts it in the hands of administrators to help enforce, and I want to thank you for your time and allowing me to testify.
Thank you so much. Members, question? Where are you teaching now?
I stepped aside from the classroom last January, and I am not currently teaching. I am a licensed social studies teacher. I stepped out in January and was 15 years at Southwest High School.
Mm. I appreciate your comment about the fulfilled, and teachers maybe aren't feeling a sense of fulfillment when they're yelling at kids to put away their cell phones constantly, so appreciate that comment.
Yes.
Thank you for testifying. Next up. Is Corey Johnson, and then Bob Driver is after that.
Hello and good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Corey Johnson. I am the chairperson for Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan Public Schools, District 196. Today I am here to testify on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association on SF 508. Thank you for allowing me to be here today to share the impact this legislation may have on our schools. SF 508 would require schools to prohibit cell phones and smartwatches for students in grades K through 8 and prohibit their use in classrooms for students in grade 9 through 12. While I understand and appreciate the desire to limit distractions in the classroom and screen time for children, I believe this bill is overly broad and would have unfortunate and unintended negative consequences. School districts are already required to adopt a cell phone policy. In fact, in District 196, we're taking comments and discussing ours tonight at our board meeting. Minnesota Statute 121A.73 requires that all school districts adopt a policy on students' possession and use of cell phones in school. These policies already address a variety of factors, including the time, place, and manner of cell phone use, the storage of cell phones during the school day, and the consequences for violating the policy. School districts today are allowed to adopt and change their policy at the local level to find a balance between limiting distractions, community need, and student safety. This bill being considered would impose a one-size-fits-all mandate on school districts that may not be appropriate for all schools or students. Additionally, I am concerned that this bill would give individual principals inconsistent discretion in making decisions about cell phone use. The bill allows principals to grant exceptions to the policy for students with disabilities or for other reasons as they see fit. In District 196, we have 30 individual principals between our elementary and secondary school levels. Having so many individual decision makers could lead to inconsistent application of the policy. It could create confusion for students and parents and put an unnecessary burden on our already taxed school administrators. When I was discussing this bill with a fellow school board member of mine, they were also very concerned with the negative impact it could have on our students with special needs. While I understand and appreciate that this bill would allow exceptions for medical use or students with an individualized education program for students with disabilities, this legislation could further stigmatize their disabilities in an educational setting amongst their peers. Having a cell phone throughout the day would conspicuously single out these students as the only ones with phone access, potentially drawing unwanted attention to their disabilities. It could be another symbol that these students are different, which may lead to unintended educational and psychological outcomes. Finally, personally, as a parent of a middle school sixth grader, our child has a cell phone he brings with him to school every day. He is responsible to make sure it is charged every night before school. And during school hours, the phone is locked. It is locked with parental controls and due to our current school policy. This allows him to use his phone responsibly for communication and coordination after school, while also ensuring that it doesn't become a distraction during class. As parents, my wife and I, we have peace of mind by being able to track his location, ensuring his safe arrival and departure from school. We are also further comforted in knowing that he has the ability to call mom, dad, or emergency services anytime, even if the phone is locked, should an emergency situation arise when he is away from home. Again, thank you to this committee for your time and opportunity to address concerns regarding SF 508, and I urge you to refrain from a statewide restrictions on cell phones in our school. I'd be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Questions, members, comments? Senator Duck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick one. I always pay a little extra attention when districts that I happen to represent a portion of come and testify. Corey, it's good to see you again. So just to be clear, it's not that you or 196 in general, or maybe the School Board Association, is against cell phone policies. Your stance is, or their stance might be, better characterized as preferring the law that was passed last year in regards to you have to have a policy, but at your level, you kind of figure out and decide in consultation with your community, teachers, staff, what that policy is versus one that's kind of just universally imposed upon all districts. Would that be a fair characterization?
Yes, Senator Duckworth, thank you. And yes, I would say that's a fair characterization. I want to speak out too and say Minnesota school boards are united on this, being for a policy where we create districts have their own policy versus just an alt-right statewide ban. Out of the 331 school districts in Minnesota, at our delegate assembly, I put forth this resolution and it passed unanimously. So I can tell you statewide, our school boards are united about not favoring legislation that outright bans it, but rather, to your point and to your characterization, individual policies for different school districts. Different school districts are all very different. My district, we serve 29,000 students. We're the third largest in the state of Minnesota. We have suburban and rural families that work in our go to school in our districts. And what is a good fit for us in our schools might be very different than a rural district in northwest corner of Minnesota, or an urban district in Minneapolis or St. Paul. And that's why school boards across the state are very united in making sure that they can create the policy that makes sense for them, and then also change the policy when they need to and are learning how that policy is actually playing out in our schools.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, just for your edification and stakeholders and guests in the audience, March 14th is when all the school districts in the state, 340, have to present to this body what their policy is. So we'll be able to take all that information and proceed forward or not proceed forward. So you said it was unanimous, the 340 school districts want the individuality of having their own policy.
Correct, Mr. Chair. 331 school districts who all have representatives that go to the school board delegate assembly did vote unanimously for the resolution that would oppose a statewide ban on cell phones.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Sorry for rounding up.
Yeah.
Okay, next testifier. Bob Driver and Michelle Krell. Identify yourself for the record and sign in, please. Thank you.
I'm so sorry. We're a long way from the classroom right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Bob Driver from MASSP, which is the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. And with me is
Michelle Krell, Executive Director of MESPA, the Minnesota Association of Elementary School Principals. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Committee, for having us here today. As education leaders, our mission is to create the best possible learning environment for our Minnesota students. During the 2024 legislative session, you tasked MESPA and MASSP with creating cell phone guidelines. In response, we developed a cell phone toolkit in June, shared it with every principal, superintendent, and school board across the state. Today, we are here to share the important resource, a research-backed practical guide that helps schools navigate the growing challenge of student cell phone use. The toolkit outlines two primary models: Away for the Day, a model where cell phones are not allowed during the academic day, an alternative model that permits limited access during passing time and lunch. This promotes digital citizenship, mindfulness, and appropriate use. These guidelines provide flexibility while ensuring a structured, research-based approach. It's essential to recognize the reality in classrooms across our state and our nation. In 2022, while serving as assistant superintendent in the Owatonna Public Schools, I saw firsthand the growing concern among middle school staff and principals about student cell phone and social media use. But just how big of a problem was it? Well, one of our teachers set out to find out. Imagine being an eighth grade student in a science class, trying to focus while a non-stop stream of notifications, Snapchat, email, text, Twitter, Instagram, missed calls, and a whole barrage of other apps coming at you, constantly demanding your attention. To measure the impact, a class of 28 students tracked their notifications over the 60-minute period. The results were staggering. Nearly 1,100 notifications in just one class. The constant buzz of cell phones disrupts learning and fuels anxiety, making students feel pressured to stay connected at all times. When they see peers engaging in digital conversations they can't be part of, they experience a fear of missing out, which heightens stress and distracts them from learning. This relentless digital pull is not only diverting their focus from academics, but also contributing to increased anxiety and a growing demand for mental health support. The following school year, the middle school implemented a cell phone policy called Away for the Day. The impact was immediate. Bullying decreased, student engagement improved, peer relations strengthened. Teachers and administrators were hand in hand in this new policy, and it was highly successful. Teachers observed students reconnecting with their classmates and lessons and engaging in conversations and play instead of being absorbed in their screens. Without phones constantly recording every misstep, students felt safer both socially and emotionally. We recognize that cell phones have become a challenge in our schools. We talked to K-12 principals from around the state to design these guidelines and options. We also recognize that education is important on the risk of the risk of social media and the importance of digital citizenship. They felt important that we empower schools with a toolkit. So the cell phone toolkit equips districts with essential resources to support effective cell phone policies, including research-backed evidence on benefits of reducing students' cell phone use, ready-to-use handbook language, sample consequences for violations, guidance on handling medical exemptions, parent and guardian communication templates. Rather than a one-size-fits-all, this cool toolkit empowers school leaders to develop policies that work for their communities while prioritizing student success. Now I'll turn it over to Bob Driver to share a little bit about how it's playing out in our schools this year.
Thank you. I'd like to share a little bit of a mid-year review of the cell phone policy. I know that many of the schools implemented at the beginning of the year, knowing we know March 14th that every school district has to have a policy, but many of the schools and most of the schools started early, made sure that they were in place when school started because it's so hard to implement something new on March 14th. So this past week, we reached out to 40 principals from around the state for their initial thoughts and just get a little feedback on what they have seen over this past year. As Ms. Carell shared, the core of the cell phone toolkit revolves around limiting phone use during instructional time while balancing the need for student engagement and well-being. After sharing the toolkit this past summer, the majority of schools modified and adjusted their policies or created new policies or created a policy for the first time. Typically, elementaries have a complete ban. Moving to the middle level, the majority of schools we talk with have adopted a Away for the Day policy, and Ms. Carell talked a little bit about that. And the high school level, schools have trended towards no phones during class, but allow them during passing time and lunch period. Schools have observed a marked improvement in student engagement and classroom behavior after the implementation of these policies. With phones restricted, students are less distracted, leading to fewer discipline issues, including cyberbullying and social media related conflicts. Teachers report better classroom environments, higher engagement, and improved academic performance. Although some students initially resisted, and some are still initially resisting, many recognized the benefits of being less distracted by their phone in their class. Schools have emphasized the importance of staff training, monthly reminders, and reinforcements to ensure consistent policy application. When enforcement is consistent, students are more likely to comply. As with any new policy, the first year of implementation is the most difficult. For schools that have had restrictive policies for years, this has been less of an issue. But we know that as these policies are put into place, that school districts will be able to figure that out and make sure that it fits the needs of their schools and their sites. Our principals went on to say that parent support for the policies is generally positive, with many agreeing that limiting phone use improves student focus. However, some parents expressed concerns about not having consistent access to their students' phones or their child's phones. Schools have worked to educate families about the benefits of these policies, particularly in reducing the negative impacts of excessive phone and social media use on mental health. Despite efforts, complete parent compliance remains a challenge. And then while phone usage is a major focus, the broader issue at play is the impact of social media on students' mental health. Concerns about cyberbullying, anxiety, and peer pressure linked to platforms and all social platforms, Snapchat, TikTok, and others, are growing. Some school leaders argue that the conversation should shift towards managing not just phone use, but also dangers posed with social media. Addressing these concerns is critical for the well-being of students. In summary, the cell phone policies have contributed to reduced distractions and the betterment of student engagement. Are there any questions that you may have for us as we created that toolkit?
Members, Senator Kunesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to refer back to the presentation from the St. Cloud folks. And in their presentation, they provided three approaches that came from the U.S. Department of Education. And I'm just wondering how much do you, as your organization, rely on recommendations or research or those sort of things that come out of the U.S. Department of Education?
Yes, Senator Kunesh, Chair, and members of the committee. Yeah, we took a look at all of that. We also took a look at the Surgeon General's warning that had just came out. And so we used that document to help support the work that we were doing. It was really clear when we talked to principals across the state that it had to be an approach just like what was described to you from St. Cloud, that it can't be a one-size-fits-all. And that's why we designed this with options, recognizing that the importance comes in digital citizenship, understanding mindfulness, understanding how and when students should utilize cell phones. We talked a lot about age appropriateness as well. When we're thinking about elementary students, do we believe elementary students are able to manage a cell phone and social media platforms? Particularly during the school day, we didn't believe that should happen. That's why Away for the Day was something that we really promoted for elementary and even middle-level students, recognizing that our high schools, we heard from high school principals, the importance of giving some choice and having students start to make mindful decisions about what is best for them. So we do have a list of resources that we utilize in the back, and that was part of the Surgeon General information that was provided to us right as we were starting to finish up our toolkit. So we used that information to help guide the work that we did.
Senator Kunesh.
So should and when the U.S. Department of Education goes away and probably the Surgeon General, where will you find real information, scientific information to guide you on really important issues such as this? Will that become now the burden of your agencies, your organizations, the districts, the superintendents? Where will this information come from that you could all rely on?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kunich, I believe that we right here in our own backyard, we have a research university as well that we can rely on to get information and to have those research-based, peer-reviewed articles that are shared. So I would say not only the University of Minnesota, but many of the universities around the country that are research-based are sharing a lot of that same type of data as well. So,
Senator Kunich?
So when you rely on those universities and academic, do you have to pay for that, or is that free information? Do you contact them and say, we're interested in learning more about this? Will you do research? So is there a cost that's going to be incurred for that?
Senator Kunich, thank you, Chair. Most likely not. We would have contact with them and talk with them about their study and try to do some fact-finding ourselves, make sure that it's strong research. And I'm guessing most universities would love to have more of their documentation shared out as well, so.
Members? I have one question. I know kids are kids, but do you guys, because you represent all the schools and the school districts in the state, do you see a difference between greater Minnesota, suburban Minnesota, and urban Minnesota as far as school districts, the policies they've adopted or are planning to adopt, or are people all over the place, or just generally a quick observation on that?
Mr. Chairperson, committee, I think that kids are kids across the entire state. And I think what we see is some of the similar things that we see in the metro, we see in greater Minnesota as well. I think what we found is school districts have really relied on their community standards to really develop the cell phone policies that will work within their communities. They did listening, many of them have done listening sessions. They've looked at what's best for their particular students and what their needs are, and then developed policies. I think a lot of the policies are very similar across our state. We're hearing that many of our elementaries and middle schools have adopted a way for the day, more at our high school level. We're seeing a lot more of that second option where there's choice. Students have access to it during passing time or during lunch, and really teaching students about the importance of digital citizenship, mindfulness, and when they utilize their phones. So I believe, unless Mr. Driver believes differently, I believe that we're seeing some consistency across the state, but definitely the belief that, and people have enjoyed being able to identify what exactly their policy might look like within their school district to enforce.
Mr. Chair, if I can add to that, when we started this toolkit, we needed a place to start. So we reached out to all our members and said, if you have a strong or effective policy, please send that our way. And so we received 65 to 70 different policies from around the state, and many of them were very similar. So whether it be urban, suburban, rural areas, so.
Thank you for coming in, both of you. Appreciated your insights and wisdom on this topic. So our last testifier is remote.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tim Godfrey, and I serve the superintendent of Lake Park Audubon Public Schools in Northwest Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to testify regarding Senate File 508 of school cell phone policy. Lake Park Audubon, we've taken a proactive approach to address cell phone use in our schools. During the 2023-2024 school year, we implemented a policy prohibiting cell phone use for students in grades PK through 8. Each morning, students were required to turn their phones into their first period teacher, and then they retrieved them at the end of the school day. Building on that success, we expanded the policy in 2024 and 2025 school year to include all students, grades PK through 12. Today, with the exception of those who require a phone for medical purposes, every student in our district turns in their phone at the start of the day and retrieves it before going home. Each classroom is equipped with a designated cell phone locker, providing an organized system for managing devices. And these are actually purchased from a company. They're specifically built for that. Clear doors on them so students can see that their phones are secure and actually in there. And then implementing this policy was a deliberate and thorough process. I met with the Lake Park Audubon Board of Education and asked them to readopt our digital use policy, which in there, again, has language pertaining to cell phone use during the instructional day. And it was reinforcing the expectations of no cell phones. We then launched a comprehensive communication campaign to inform students and parents well in advance, ensuring they understood the upcoming changes and the consequences of noncompliance. While we faced initial resistance, believe it or not, mostly from parents, we remained steadfast in our approach, officially rolling out the district-wide policy on the first day of the 2024-2025 school year. The impact has been remarkable, at least. Research has consistently shown that unrestricted access to smartphones during the school day hinders student engagement and peer interaction. We've seen firsthand how this policy has transformed our school culture. Hallway wandering has significantly increased. Instances of cyberbullying and behavior disruptions have dropped. Student engagement in learning has soared. Perhaps most tellingly, our lunchroom, once quiet with students absorbed in their screens, is now filled with conversation, laughter, and real human connection. While our policy has been successful, it was crafted specifically to fit our district, our students, and our community. The proposed revisions to Minnesota Statute 121A.73, like many statewide mandates, undermines the authority of locally elected school boards and assumes a one-size-fits-all approach. Lake Park Audubon is not Duluth, nor Albert Lea, nor Moorhead. Each district has its own unique culture and needs, and the ability to make policy decisions at the local level is critical to ensuring the best outcomes for their students. Additionally, allowing principals to make exceptions to a statewide mandate introduces inconsistency and undermines enforcement. Policy decisions should be determined by school boards and enforced by superintendents, ensuring a clear and uniform approach within each district. I share this committee's concerns regarding the negative effects of cell phone use in schools. The issue is real and districts must address it. However, I urge you to trust governance of our locally elected school boards to make these decisions in the best interest of their students, communities.
Thank you, Mr. Godfrey. Questions?
Yes, sir.
Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Godfrey. Members, any last comments, questions, insights, observations, anything you want to get off your chest for Senator Mann or before we hear for closing remarks? Senator Mayquaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's very cold in here. Is the air conditioning on? It's freezing.
It was just me.
No, it's freezing in here. I know, because I look like a grandma on that. Okay. Senator Mann, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward, and it's bipartisan, too. So I just, you know, we did not create this problem. Nobody that testified today created this problem. No parent at home created this problem. No kid created this problem. There are a group of corporate tech people whose own kids go to schools where there's not even like computers. They go to tech-free schools now because they know the harm that they created through social media and through these phones. Like, they literally did a whole New York Times piece about it. Tim Cook doesn't want his nephew using it, and the CEO of eBay and Google and Meta, they all send their kids to tech-free schools because they know what they created. And so I'm just really appreciative that you, a mom of three, doctor, spent your summer traveling across the state to hear from communities about the harms
that those people out in Silicon Valley created for us. And we have parents and we have districts and we have educators trying to figure out how do we solve this problem of addiction that was on purpose in our kids. And I think you did a really good job. And I'm really grateful to you for spending that time for a problem you did not create, and that it is not our job in this room, like anybody in this room, to fix. And it is incredibly frustrating. I think people know how I feel about the tech industry. And so I just, you know, I don't know how we walk it back, and it's going to be painful. I think you said a kid said she would die if she didn't have her phone with her in school, right? Like, that's what addiction feels like. And adults are addicted to their phones too. We just had formative years without them, and we're lucky for that. Everybody on this committee had formative years without something that was pinging every second with something that was funnier and more interesting or more angering or more salacious or more sexual or more sports betting than kids do right now. And it is incredibly unfair that they live in a world where this has been unleashed on them. And so whatever we can do to try and protect those formative years from this incredibly harmful technology is good. And we can talk about what the best policy is, and I think you have done a really good job here, Senator Mann. I support your bill. But the problem is not in this room, and it is not the kids, it is not their parents, it is not the educators, and it is not this legislature. And I just am furious that we're sitting here cleaning up the mess while people make money constantly off this addiction, and it just frustrates me to no end. And so thank you for doing something about this, and thank you for working with our colleagues across the aisle to do something about this, because we got to do something, and I guess this is as good of a place to start as possible.
Members? Well, I just want to also thank you, Senator Mann, before hearing your final remarks, and we all understand the balance between local control and legislative action, but when we sit here and hear so many testifiers testifying about we banned cell phones in our school K-8 and now they're limited 9th through 12th grade and we've seen this and this and this and this and this. At what point do we just say, well, we're okay with you deciding then? And when we hear from the actual people in the trenches that the policies of taking the cell phones away from the kids has been the best policy. And everything that Senator McQuay just said rings true. And so it just seems like we've taken marijuana out of their hands and cigarettes out of their hands and gambling out of their hands, or have attempted to. Maybe this is something else we need to maybe take out of their hands for all the right reasons. And again, speaking for myself, we're struggling with what to do, but I appreciate all your work in bringing this to us today. So final comments for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So I just wanted to be very clear that this is not a flat statewide ban on cell phones. It is not a one-size-fits-all approach. Not only are there explicit exceptions named in the bill, but also the school districts, very deliberately written on this bill, can write their own policies and do what works best for them in their own districts. So I think that there's a misunderstanding of what this bill does, because the people who came to testify against it spend the majority of their time saying how great it's been to have cell phones removed from their schools. So this bill simply reinforces what schools are already doing. It doesn't change their policies. It doesn't change the way they do things. It just provides extra backup to do something that every single person who testified today said was the right thing to do. So that's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Mann. And we'll be laying this Senate file 508 over, and looking forward to seeing what the school districts present to us on March 14th. With that said, Senator Abler, anxiously awaiting your wisdom and thoughts.
Mr.
Senate File 392, Senator Abler.
Yeah, thanks. You know, I know there's a pretty good sized crowd for the cell phone thing. They're really here for this bill, Mr. Chair. Some of the things that we go through are just that amazing. And so I was quite shocked when I ran into a fellow from Liberia who wanted to, they had a school there and they didn't have any books. I said, oh, hey, I know a place that has books. I called up my district. By the way, they mentioned that some districts are the third largest, but anyway. So I just called that district, the two notches ahead of that in size. And they said, well, yeah, we got a ton of books, but we have to auction them off. Like, what? And I'm not sure what demand there is for old books. And unless you're trying to heat someplace, just burn them up or recycle them or something. But anyway, as I dug in a little deeper, it's actually, they're forbidden to do this. And so I thought, well, let's just let them, give them away to a nonprofit organization. And so instead of having to have it submit to an auction. And come to find out, it's really a thing. And whereas there are many places that don't have any books, and I don't care where they are, there's actually many families don't have books in their households, and there's an amendment that Senator Kunish came up that would help for that. But is Holly there? I've got a testifier, and then that's all I have, Mr. Chair. So.
Yes, I am.
Begin your testimony and identify yourself for the record, please.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Holly Grebner, and I'm the Library Media Teaching and Learning Specialist at Anoka Hennepin Schools. I'll walk you through the current process we follow for disposing of obsolete or surplus materials with a particular focus on textbooks and library books. After weeding library books, our library media specialists consult with teachers and staff members at the building to assess if the weeded books could be used elsewhere in the school, such as literature groups, classroom libraries, preschool programs, before and after school programs, and so on. If not, the weeded books are packed up and sent to our central warehouse. The warehouse solicits a multi-year agreement to sell both library books and textbooks to interested vendors. As books are received, our warehouse staff calls our contracted vendor to pick them up. At times, our current contracted vendor is unable to handle Anoka Hennepin's volume of books. Then the district attempts to sell them through the public surplus auction website in alignment with State Statute 471.345. Senator Abler's bill, SF-392, would provide school districts with an additional option, donating books to charitable organizations. We are particularly supportive of this idea as it aligns with our goal of promoting literacy and cultivating a strong reading culture. Encouraging a lifelong passion for reading and learning is an essential objective that we strive to achieve. Each year, we participate in exciting reading competitions like the Star of the North, Modheart Lovelace, and Battle of the Books. To support these events, we purchase multiple copies of the selected books, usually in paperback, to keep the cost down. These books receive a lot of attention and love as students read them extensively in preparation for the competitions. However, once the voting or competitions conclude in the spring, the enthusiasm for these books tends to fade. While we retain a few copies for the library, we often weed out the rest. We strive to keep the books within the Anoka Hennepin School District whenever possible. However, there are times we cannot. It would be highly beneficial if we could donate these books to charities, just as the Anoka County Library already does. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, the librarian, Senator Makeway.
I just have a
Senator Duckworth did have his hand up first.
I just have a technical question. I already conferred with the chair of the Education Finance Committee and said, "Would this have to go to you?" And she didn't think so. Is this going to the floor today, or are we just holding this one over, Mr. Chair?
I'm holding it over.
Okay.
Senator Kunish.
Thank you. And thank you for explaining how we work with our books at the at our school districts when we have that surplus. As a library media specialist, I often had this conundrum as well, and really appreciate the fact that we're able to address that. I do have an amendment, Chair, that I'd like to offer.
Senator Kunesh has the A1 amendment.
So we heard about how school districts might take all their extracurriculum or outdated curriculum, books that they've weeded from the library, and box them up, send them to a warehouse, and then either try to sell them, or I know that the school district that I worked in, we would see if an organization called Books for Africa would want them. And they would literally ship those books over to Africa. Some of the books are outdated curriculum. Some of them are multiple copies of pieces of literature, as the media specialist explained. But my amendment would allow those books and even the old curriculum to be available to families of students that reside in that district, so to the students. And I can think of many times when I weeded libraries and had quite a few carts of books that actually, you know, by legislation, we couldn't let those students have. And so in an effort to get these pieces of literature out into the hands of the students, you know, old curriculum can still be kind of fun for younger kids, that we would allow the families of the students to also have access to any of the surplus books or the books that are being weeded out and removed from the district.
Senator Abler, would you, thoughts on the A1 amendment?
Well, I think it fills an important gap. As I was digging into some more talking to Ms. Grebner, she pointed that out too, that they would like to give them to families and that it's not as easy as you would think. Actually talking to one group, they actually put them in the hallway, which is probably illegal. So we just want to make sure that this can happen. So I have some more comments, but to the amendment, I think it's very friendly and greatly improves the bill to be broader and even more benefit. So please vote yes.
So somebody want to make a motion?
I would like to move my A1 amendment.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion or amendment passed.
And I can stand for questions, and I'll just put all my thoughts at the end if you're done. So if anybody else wants to.
Anybody else? Senator Duckworth?
Mr. Chair, I would just, you know, I don't want to change what you have planned for today. I understand that you intend to hold it over, but maybe in a future meeting we can pick it back up and move it to the floor. It seems like it's a pretty good bipartisan, easy bill. We passed a couple of good bipartisan ones today off the Senate floor, so maybe we can get this one done as well.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Oh, I have a couple ending comments. Oh, yeah. You're welcome.
thank you for caring about where these books are going to go. And doing the right thing, and it's a great idea, and it's a great bill, and if kids are going to benefit, throughout locals' kids all the way to students in other countries, because of your bill, it's noble, Senator. So thank you. Final comment.
And I appreciate that, and I didn't mean to cut you off. Maybe I did. I don't know, but. But thank you very much. And it's amazing how sometimes a small thing can make a big thing. As I've talked to some of my local doctors who have been very worried about reading in the homes, and some kids don't have any books in their house. And as we try to get them reading in school, the more you can get them on track, you know, even, you know, just birth to three and four, engaging in some of this stuff, appreciating what a book is. And maybe it's from the parents who'll take the time to actually sit down and for like nothing. It's already been paid for. And I think as I listen to the testimony and the thoughts, I'll might just wordsmith it to make it even more flexible. So I don't know why if it's been educational group, but I think we're on the right track. And if it goes to the floor on that way or taking it up again, there's a lot of little things, Mr. Chair and members, that can make a big difference in these families. And we talked in a previous committee about how with opt-in that the social services and the corrections and schools and public health can all work together. And so there may well even be some way to even have a greater collaboration on using the Senator Kunesh's amendment to even broaden the impact of this. So anyway, thanks for the time. I appreciate it. And thanks to the droves of people who came out to cheer for me in this. Is anybody left, Mr. Chair? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Abler. So the Senator Abler's bill 508, correct? 392. Which one is it? 392. Will, as amendment, will be laid over and for on the bill. Our next hearing will be on Wednesday, February 12th. We'll be hearing from the school counselor of the year, and the theme is going to be mental health in our schools. So any testifiers that you'd like to bring forward from your own communities and districts would be greatly appreciated. Our work continues. With that said, Senate Education Policy adjourns.